Today, I'm really excited to get to talk to JT Woods, former Baylor safety, Sugar Bowl champ, Big 12 champ. We're going to reflect on his career as a Baylor Bear and what's next for him in his football future, potentially in the NFL. So hopefully you enjoy this podcast on the Sikkim 365 Daily Podcast and, of course, on YouTube as well. Welcome in. I'm on the phone with JT Woods, former Baylor safety, Big 12 champion, and Sugar Bowl champ. JT, you're coming off a big Sugar Bowl win, and I know you got a lot of things going on in your life right now, getting ready for the NFL draft prep and things like that, but thank you so much for taking some time just to talk about your awesome career, the heartbreak kid, and just kind of going through just your path to Baylor and how we got to this point. I really appreciate you, man.
Thank you. I really appreciate you for having me on.
Yeah, so I know we're kind of going to go through a whole journey here of your kind of beginnings at Cibolo Steel High School all the way to, you know, signing with Baylor to winning the Sugar Bowl to going to two Big 12 championships. So, I mean, it's been pretty crazy, I know, from the beginning to now, and I know you've turned into a big fan favorite. So let's start with the very beginning. You know, coming from Cibolo Steel, a really prestigious program, to becoming a Baylor Bear, but I know you went through some struggles at Steel. Can you just kind of reflect on what that was like? I know you had an amazing junior year, but then your senior year didn't quite go as planned. Just kind of reflecting on those couple years there at Steel.
Of course. So just kind of starting out, you know, when you're young, at least in my opinion, most people, they're just playing for fun. So that was kind of always the biggest thing for me. I was just always playing for fun, never really playing with the goal of going to be, you know, a collegiate athlete and playing college football. I was always just playing because it was something you did. All my friends were playing. So that was kind of what was leading me to play all the way up into about my junior year. That junior year, when I started getting a little bit of love from some college coaches and some schools, I started to think, okay, yeah, maybe I can be a collegiate athlete. And then, so that was also predicated on the fact that we were playing very well, too, as a football team. My junior year, we went all the way to the state championship where we played DeSoto. We ended up losing, but it's just funny because it's a small world. On that DeSoto team, I actually played against Byron Hanspark and Xavier Newman. So just my future teammates at the time. But, you know, we're coming off a really, really good year. I had started all of those games. And then going into my senior year, there had just been some, you know, kind of the waters were tested. Some of the coaches thought that I wasn't producing the way that they thought I should be producing or could be producing. So they kind of ended up moving me to wide receiver. And so my senior year, I literally played wide receiver for like 3/4 of the entire season. And so that was like very heartbreaking to me in a sense, because I felt like I shouldn't be playing football. Like I couldn't play football at the next level. And at that time, I actually had committed to Baylor University. So I went back and forth with myself. It was a very, very hard time for me to get through. And it was very disheartening for me because at the time it seemed like the coaches were doing something malicious. And, you know, I've talked with those coaches, and that may not have been the case for all of them, but it was just very hard for me to get through that time. And so me leaving early that January, after our football season was kind of the best thing that had ever happened to me because I was able to hit a hard reset. I was able to let everything that had happened in high school go. And for the first time in my life, start fresh and with a whole new group of people. And, you know, those people ended up becoming my brothers. So I'm sure we'll get into that as I talk more about my college career.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, it's such a cool story that you played, you know, X and Hanspark in that DeSoto game your junior year. And then, of course, your senior year, y'all went 9-5, one of kind of the weirdest years for Steel football because, I mean, y'all have been a powerhouse for so long. And yeah, like you said, I know it was challenging. You got a new head coach and that kind of changed some things as well. But I kind of wanted to ask, you know, if things had gone right, if you had played defense again, you had 87 tackles your junior year, if you would have gotten a chance to play more defense your senior year, do you feel like you could have gotten more offers or more attention on the recruiting side of things?
I definitely think that I would have gotten a little bit more love. Obviously, when you have a defensive player not playing defense, that kind of sparks a few red flags, and it did with Baylor as well. Coach Brandon was, you know, the person that I was in the most contact with at that time. And so me and him had been in contact. Me and him had talked about it a little bit. But, you know, thankfully they were him, Coach Rule, everybody was very open, and they were understanding of the situation that I was in. But, of course, I would have gotten a little bit more love. But that was never the thing for me. I was never the type to want to stack offers. Like, I knew you could only choose one school. And for me, early on, I had knew that Baylor was the place that I wanted to be. So I wasn't really concerned about the offers. The biggest thing that was disheartening to me was the fact that some of the people that I thought cared about me, it just didn't seem like they cared about me as much. And then that kind of left a rift in my heart when it came to football. And of course, football is tied into, you know, me interacting with a lot of my friends, especially at a high school level, because all my best friends are playing football. And a lot of them are playing football on defense, so I'm not getting to play with him. But luckily, my best friend, he was actually a wide receiver at the time. Me and him both ran track together. And it's sad to say, but they kind of did the same thing with him as well. I won't get into detail because that's kind of his business. But they kind of did something very similar to him. So me and him both were at receiver, and we weren't really playing. So me and him getting to go through that experience together, it just made our friendship that much better. I still talk to him every single day, like to this day. But just the whole situation, looking back on it, it made me a lot stronger of a person. But just to think of what would have happened if I were to have played football, you know, my senior year, you know, who knows, the sky could have been a limit. I could have gotten more offers. I could have just gotten a little bit more, just a little bit extra work in before I ended up making my college transition. But hindsight's 2020, and I think it played out just fine for me.
So JT, I've always kind of been a believer that you were essentially the perfect Matt Rule recruit. And the reason why I say that is because, you know, there were two reasons for it. You had these really prestigious academic offers, Yale, Columbia, Brown, Navy. I mean, really, really good academic offers. Clearly a kid that was very smart and passionate in the classroom. But the other side of things that Matt Rule also really focused on in his time at Baylor was those testing times, the speed. And I know you're a track guy. You ran track at Baylor. You ran track at a high level at Steele. What would you say to that? Do you believe that, you know, when Matt Rule recruited you, were those some of the things that he absolutely loved about your game?
Yes, sir. I'll never forget this. Him and, you know, Coach Fran Brown, they made like a little folder, and it was like your 4-year predictions of what we think of you. And literally to this day, I still remember all the stuff that, you know, Fran Brown had in that folder that him and Coach Rule had discussed. Like, all the stuff that they had predicted was to a T. He just had a system that was developing young players. And the greatest thing that I loved about that was it wasn't just developing young players to be good football players. It was developing them to be great men. And I really appreciate all the things that he did for me in the 2 years that we were together. It made me a better man. It made me a better football player. And so I have nothing but love for him and all the coaching staff that were him and, you know, had their hands on me, developing me and molding me into the man that I am today.
Yeah, so I know you said that Fran and Matt Rule had those conversations with you when you were going through a struggle at Steele, but to be honest, I mean, you had to be watching Baylor and also, you know, going, oh, mm-hmm. man, you know, they went 1-11. It's not like everything was fine and dandy for that team either. So I'm sure it was kind of relatable, but watching them go through 1-11, I'm sure that was difficult, but was there a game or a moment that you saw during that 2017 season where you're like, okay, I see things turning in the right direction, or, oh, I see an area where maybe I could come and contribute to kind of this culture that Matt Rule was building?
You know, it's actually funny that you say that, because thinking back on it, there was never a time where I was concerned about the program and where it was headed. I know the record that year probably didn't reflect positivity, but me and my dad went to every single home game except for one. We didn't go to, I believe it was the Liberty game that year. So I had a whole bunch of, like, you know, I saw everything from the stands. I wasn't just watching it from home. And so I was watching, and I could see the growth. I think that the Duke game that year, was just the greatest testament to that, because they were in that game. They could have easily won that game. You could just tell it was a little bit of inexperience and, you know, just trying to weed out some of the older Baylor traditions and Baylor standards that had been there, because those were not rules standards at all, weren't even close to it. So I think everybody knew, at least everybody that was, you know, from the inside looking in, it was going to take time to get the goal that Rule wanted. And, you know, obviously we did it. He was able to turn that team around. We ended up going to the Sugar Bowl, Big 12 Championship, you know, same thing we did this year, but all right, we didn't get to win it. But still, he took a very, very bad football team. I'll just say bad football team, and turned him into a very good football team in a short period of time. And I appreciate what he did for all those guys. And like I said, you can ask a lot of guys. It was more than just about football with him. It was all about, you know, creating a better father, creating a better son, better grandson, just a better man in general. And so for me, I knew that, you know, better people make better football players. A lot of people have said that. Coach Aranda has even hopped on that a little bit too. And so I knew it was just going to take time. I was never concerned about the record. And yeah, obviously me being a young kid watching that, I thought, yeah, maybe I could go and contribute a little bit, which I was able to. Thankfully, I was able to contribute a little bit to that. So it was all positivity in my mind. It was never like, oh, I don't think I want to go here anymore because they're losing, because I've never had that mindset.
Yeah, so that season ends, you end your high school career, and you decide to early enroll, and you show up getting ready for the 2018 season. What was the biggest adjustment for you to the college game and just to the academic side of college and just really making it more of a job than it probably was in the past?
I'll say the school aspect of it was the easiest thing. I think the type of person that I am, I kind of like having a little bit of freedom. I don't necessarily need like a methodical, like schedule or planned out stuff. So the school aspect was easier than high school, in my opinion, because I was just kind of able to do things on my own. I was able to do work when I wanted to do the work, if that was early, if that was on time. But then when it came to workouts, like that's something that's completely out of the ballpark, like out of the realm. It's crazy because I remember talking to my parents like that first week there, and it's just indescribable how different high school is to college when it comes to working out. They're just not even on the same level. And then when it came to the actual game speed, like it's like you're playing football with times four, like everything is fast forwarded. Like everything was just so much faster than what I had gone through. I think the biggest thing is in high school, you're just kind of playing for fun. You're a good athlete, so you're just out there making plays just because. You don't really know X's and O's that well, but in college, like that's where you start to actually learn football and the fundamentals and X's and O's and plays and route concepts. And there's so many different things that are in football that I don't think people really understand. And you're not going to really understand that until you get to that collegiate level.
Yeah, and you showed up in 2018, and I know we talked a little bit before we recorded this and talked a little bit about the fact that you had built a really, really good relationship with Phil Snow. And I'm sure it started in that when you early enrolled and he was your position coach as well. What did he mean to you for your growth and just kind of the flashes that you saw in yourself, maybe early on in that 2018 season and kind of throughout that 2018 season when, like you said, you did not redshirt, you played a ton for that defense and for, of course, the special teams as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was very pivotal in my development early on. Literally, me and Christian Morgan, if we weren't in school, we were up in the facility. It took me and Christian, I want to say at least like 2 months just to like really understand formations and where certain people go. And, you know, thankfully we were able to learn that in depth because we came early and we, you know, Coach Snow had time to just sit in the office and, you know, show us NFL tape of people in the post or draw formations and quiz us a little bit. Like, we would literally wake up in the morning, have breakfast, go to class. For lunch, come to the facility, have lunch with Coach Snow, and literally go back to class and come back for practice. So we were spending an ample amount of time in the facility, and I think that just helped us, you know, grow and develop that much further. And it also helps as well when you're learning the defense from somebody who created the defense themselves, someone who knows ins and outs of the defense and He would tell us the things that you could get away with, you know, things that you couldn't do in this defense, where the holes were. And so I think that just kind of helped me develop a sense of how much in depth defense really is and how much you need to know in order for you to be a good defender.
So I know a little bit later that year, and this really isn't far into the season, the Kansas game was one that you and I had talked about, because I believe it was either your first start or your first, you know, game where you got quite a few reps. You had a sack in that game, three tackles, and I believe that was also the game where you almost had a pick six. It was kind of right there for you.
Right.
And that was that first glimpse, I think, where we saw, okay, JT Woods might have a knack for creating turnovers, because we had heard about it a little bit in the spring, but then finally saw it and it was right there. And I know it just slipped through your fingertips. Talk about that game and just kind of that play in general. I know it was one of those first moments in your career where it was like, oh man, a big play is just waiting to happen.
Yeah, so that wasn't my very first start. I didn't end up starting that game, but I did come in very, very early. I want to say it might have been even the first drive, because that was when they created a new package, which is actually what we ended up going to the next year as our base defense. But we put in a new package, and in that package I was starting. So I played a lot that game. It was kind of the first game where I got very significant defensive snaps early on. And I was a little nervous, obviously, my first collegiate game, getting some key snaps in. And I just remember I made kind of a dumb play, a dumb decision, and Coach Snow sat me down. He looked at me and said, is the moment too big for you? Like, is this not what you wanted? And so from that moment on, I think I kind of let go of everything, and I was just kind of playing free. And I was playing a lot faster. As you said, I was able to make the sack. And a little early on in the game, I ended up dropping that, probably the easiest gift that a defender could ever get. We saw it literally in the Arizona Rams games, like Kyler Murray just throws it and it lands right in the dude's hands and he just walks into the end zone. That was literally the moment that I could have had, but I ended up coming short. But it taught me a lot of things. Definitely one, catch the ball. But two, that when I'm playing fast and having fun, that's kind of when I'm at my best football. I had a few good tackles in that game too. I ran the alley pretty well. I very vividly remember that game like it was yesterday. It's crazy. But I think that was a very pivotal moment in my college career.
Yeah, and then kind of fast forwarding through that year, y'all had a bunch of really close games. It was kind of an up and down year, lost a couple, then would win a couple, kind of back and forth. But I really want to focus on the Vanderbilt game. Winning the Texas Bowl, you know, getting a massive win like that, heading into the 2019 offseason. Where did you feel like the program was at when y'all won that game and kind of the momentum you had after that, getting your seventh win of the year and becoming a 7-6 team with kind of big aspirations for the following season?
I definitely think that set the standard for when it came to bowl games. You know, because before that, those players hadn't really had a taste of bowl games in, I want to say, like 3 or 4 years or whatever it was. So that was the biggest thing. And he really, you know, Coach Rule being him, he really harped on having a winning season. So going into that Tech game, it was like everything's on the line. We win this game, we get to go to a bowl game. That's an extra few weeks of preparation. That's extra time for the young guys, me being young guys, for us to learn. And during that bowl prep, I want to say me and Christian practiced full pads every single practice. The seniors were able to kind of just take their pads off and relax a little bit. So that was really big for me and Christian too, because you got to think, we were able to get like 6-7 more practices in Houston, full pads, just getting to run around a little bit more. And so I think that just kind of set the standard that, you know, this isn't a team that's going 1-11 ever again. We're going to be the best that we could possibly be. We're going to bowl games. And so that was just kind of the start of everything. And for me, that's what I had understood. You know, because going into my junior year, that was the only year we didn't go to a bowl game. But then the next year we went to the Sugar Bowl. So it was natural for me, like in my mind, you're going to be playing late December, early January. That's just what happens. And so that didn't plan out my junior year, but I'm sure we'll go into that a little bit later.
Yeah, so moving on to the 2019 season, y'all had a nice off season, kind of got prepared for, I think, a season where y'all had high hopes. And I know this season came with some luck, as all seasons do. You won a lot of really close games. But leading into 2019, I mean, you had guys like Graylin Arnold, Henry Black, Chris Miller at the safety and nickel positions. And I know they were very influential in your development as a player. Kind of learning from those guys for you and probably Christian as well. How important was it that you really took in everything that those guys had to offer from a teaching perspective?
It was very important. I wouldn't be the person that I am, the player that I am today, if it wasn't for those guys. They each instilled something different in me that I think is very, very pivotal when it comes to the game of football. For example, Chris Miller, he played the fastest I've ever seen anybody on a football field play, like of all time. And so he instilled in me, like, you run to the ball, you play fast. You still play fast when you run to the ball. Now, I know he didn't give me interceptions because his hands weren't the best, but he had a whole bunch of TFLs, and he was flying around. He ran the alley really well, and I just loved his game. Graylin Arnold, obviously, my game kind of reflects that in a little bit when it comes to, you know, being a ball hawk. He had that determination that when the ball was in the air, it was his. It didn't matter who else was around him. He was going to go get the ball. Instinctive football, that's what he played, so I kind of took on that a little bit. And then Henry is the big fundamental. He was a guy that he was going to do the fundamentals. He was going to do his play, his job to a T, no matter what. He was really big on running to the ball. Henry never came out of a game, like, for me, never got subbed out of a game. Henry played every single game, every snap. He was just a guy that was the definition of the brand. And so I took that from him, too. And I just tried my best. Obviously, I'm a different person. I'm a different player than them. But I tried my best at trying to pick apart different pieces of their game and add it to mine as best as I could. And, you know, those guys are very influential in my game now. Great big brothers to me and Christian. You know, we had so many laughs with those guys. Still talk to them on the phone to this day as they're doing all their stuff. And it's just always fun. Even at 2019, I always said you can literally turn on a football game almost any given Sunday and, you know, see somebody that I played with that year in the NFL. So it's really, really fun to follow all those guys and watch what they're doing.
Yeah, so I mean, there were a lot of great memories from that season. Y'all started 9-0, and then it led into the big College Game Day matchup against Oklahoma, a game that I know y'all were very much ready for, and y'all came out and played just such an amazing first half of football. Obviously, things did not go great in the second half, but what were your takeaways from that first meeting? We'll get into the second meeting as well, but that first meeting, kind of walk me through kind of your thoughts on, you know, how that game ended up going, and also kind of how y'all were able to rebound and win the next two games and not really let that one game turn into two losses.
You know, just the first thing kind of going off of that is just it's not easy winning football games. No matter what the score is during the game and the first half of the game, there are four quarters for a reason, and you got to play all four of those quarters. I think that was the biggest thing that I learned from that, especially when you're going against a great team, a powerhouse like Oklahoma. Just playing four quarters, I think in that first half, we kind of shocked ourselves. We didn't think we were going to play as good as we did, probably the best defensive game we had had going up to that halftime all year. And so I think knowing that you have to be, you know, Coach McGuire said this all the time, literally harped on it, you can't get tired of playing good defense. And so just making good plays, don't get tired of just doing your job and, you know, getting third down conversions and third down stops and all that. Just playing good football, don't get tired of it. And so I think going into that game, we kind of not complacent, because that's not really the word I want to use, but we kind of let back on the gas a little bit, and then it kind of caught up to us later on. And so I think that was something that we learned from that game. That's something that I learned from that game, is when things are going good, keep them going good. Don't kind of relax a little bit, especially in football. That's not the game to do that, because anything can happen on any given Saturday.
Yeah, and that was just a really wild game, and obviously Oklahoma ended up making a crazy comeback. And I mean, y'all had to get mentally ready, because I believe it was the week before you had the, you know, triple overtime game against TCU. You had the West Virginia game the week before. It was just a lot of close games kind of stacked on top of each other throughout that entire season. I mean, the Tech game was crazy. Denzel Mims with that fantastic grab down the sideline. I mean, just 2019, the regular season, was there one moment where you kind of sit there and go, man, that was just one of those you can't even explain it type moments that kind of allowed y'all to get to that 11-1 record during the regular season?
I would say I think mine is when J-Mike ran the ball in at Tech in overtime to seal the deal. I think that was really big for me, because in my mind I'm like, wow, like this is, I can't believe like this happened. Like it's just the outcome of that game was just completely different at every single snap, every single possession, every single down, just going in throughout the entire game. And that was a very fun game, a lot of fun game. It was a home game. That's the first game that I've been in where I was like, wow, McLean Stadium can get pretty loud. I very vividly remember like going into that drive, that first defensive overtime drive, the stadium was rocking. Like it's just crazy how loud the fans were. And so I think that game was a lot of fun looking back on it in the moment. But like you said, you know, a lot of those games came down to the wire, and that's just kind of football. Those games could have went either way. And like I said, football games aren't easy to win. Wins are hard to come by. So you got to embrace every single win you got. And that year, I definitely learned to embrace wins.
Yeah, and I mean, Denzel made that crazy catch in that game, and then actually had probably one of his more routine opportunities to win that game in regulation, if you remember. And just it slipped through his fingertips. It was just one of those weird games where, you know, you had the Charlie Brewer, I guess it was kind of a snap fumble, right? I mean, that happened as well. I mean, just a crazy, crazy game. So y'all were able to get through that year 11-1. You go to the Big 12 championship. This was your first Big 12 championship appearance. You took on Oklahoma, the rematch. And I think a lot of people went into that game thinking Baylor gave Oklahoma their best shot in the game in Waco, and that it was kind of going into this game, I think a lot of people were anticipating Oklahoma to win this game pretty easily. And that did not happen. This ended up being one of those, another epic, historic-type game. You had a lot of brilliant moments on both sides. It went to overtime. I mean, what do you remember from that game? And also just kind of your thoughts on that last drive when, obviously, Chris Platt caught that ball in the open field, and it was him versus Trey Brown. Obviously, Trey Brown was able to make a play, but just another crazy game.
Yeah, just another instance, you know, football can come down to one play. I think that's kind of just the testament to that game right there. So many different plays in that game you can kind of pinpoint. I think defensively we played very well. Offensively we played well too. We just kind of struggled with injuries a little bit throughout the game. But, you know, Gary, who was injured at the time, came in and made a few plays. And then ultimately that's when everybody kind of got their first glimpse of Jacob Zeno, who came in and, you know, did a phenomenal job as a young guy out there on one of the biggest stages in the Big 12, the biggest stage in the Big 12. So, you know, that game can just be picked apart a whole bunch of different ways. Even, you know, Chris Platt barely getting hogged down. You know, credit to that guy for running. But that's just, you know, that's sometimes how the game unfolds. It wasn't meant to be. I'm not one to harp on, you know, things. So I just kind of wrapped it up. But I knew eventually we were going to get back. And it's funny because I told Lockhart, like, we're going to be back. We're going to win this. And the very first thing that he did after the game that we just won, the Big 12 championship this year, he came up to me and he said, I don't know if you remember this, but you said we were going to be back. And we were, and we won. And I thank you for that. So I was happy that he was a part of that too. You know, there's just so many guys that were a part of that 2019 team that I wish could have had the outcome that we had this year. You know, I really wanted it for those guys, but it just wasn't meant to be. But the writing wasn't on the wall. You know, that wasn't the end of Baylor as we know it.
Yeah, so, I mean, there was a lot of kind of speculation and rumors going into your Sugar Bowl performance and kind of what was going to occur after the Sugar Bowl, but y'all took on Georgia. This was, again, first time you were playing in the Sugar Bowl. What do you remember about the lead-up to that game? And just kind of, I know there was a lot of distractions potentially with a lot of people talking about, oh, Matt Rhule's going to go to the NFL or, you know, what have you. Georgia was missing a couple players. There was a lot of kind of various news going on. But what do you remember about that time prepping for the game and then, of course, actually playing in the game, which I know didn't quite go in y'all's favor?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is we didn't really know exactly who all was going to play 100%. From a Georgia standpoint, And then also, you know, everything was kind of out there about Rule, what he was going to do. You know, he made it, he did his best to make it sure that he was here for this game and he wasn't going anywhere. Obviously, that didn't happen. But I think people's minds were everywhere. Also, it was new for us to be in the New Year's Six Bowl. So we hadn't really been there before. We were in New Orleans. You know, obviously people are going to have fun. So we definitely made the best out of the trip that we had. I just think that we weren't as business-like as we probably should have been going into that game. In my opinion, I don't think we were really ready to play Georgia, a team like Georgia at the time. So I think all of that stuff kind of played a part in that game. But I don't think we had a bad outing. I think we got beat on a couple plays that we shouldn't have been beat on, that we wouldn't have been beat on during the season. But it has been a long season. You know, there's not a lot of guys used to playing that many games. I know I definitely wasn't. So I think that played a part in it too.
Yeah, and that was a big stepping stone year as y'all kind of took that next step from a 7-6 team to an 11-win team and kind of getting back to where Baylor was before, you know, the scandal and before Rule. So 2020 is kind of just one of those years, man, that I'm sure you probably have a hard time describing. I mean, first Matt Rule leaves. He goes to the Carolina Panthers. COVID happens in March. Dave Aranda is hired, and Dave Aranda, like, can't meet y'all in person. I mean, what that I don't even know if you have words to describe just how difficult that year was, from the coaching change to just trying to meet a new coach and figure out, you know, where's this Baylor program now after such a successful 2019 season.
Yeah, definitely just COVID year. I mean, that is just the first year of COVID. I'm sure everybody has those stories, like when COVID first hit and how you know, life as they knew it was drastically changed. And it was kind of the same for us. The biggest thing was, for me, I was always trying to look for positives in the situation. Obviously, so happy for Roll and all the staff. Really proud of those guys. They definitely deserved getting that, you know, that pay raise and going to the NFL. So there was never any animosity towards them. It was obviously sad because those are the guys that I had came in with. But very optimistic about what Coach Aranda was going to do for us. You know, him being such a great defensive mind. I was really ready to just kind of learn and soak up anything he had to offer for me. But as you said, we weren't able to really meet. So I think we met him when he first got there. We were still on campus for a little bit. And then going into that spring, everything was shut down. We didn't have a spring ball. We were literally doing Zoom meetings, which is the worst thing ever. Like, it was so hard to just sit in a Zoom meeting and look at a screen and try and learn anything about football. You know, but I think the biggest thing was we were able to kind of be with our families. I hadn't been home in a while, so I was able to kind of enjoy that time with my family. So like I said, just trying to find positives out of, you know, negative situations was my whole thing. Trying to just get as much one-on-one time as I could with certain coaches, trying to get to know them. You know, got to know Coach College fairly well during that time period. You know, but even leading up into that year, that's when all the stuff was happening. You know, all the Black Lives Matter and all that stuff was going down too. So that caused a rift in our team as well. So, you know, having to meet about stuff like that over Zoom, like that's just not stuff that you necessarily want to be doing, especially not over Zoom. So I think that whole year was very unfortunate, but and, you know, all of that stuff trickled into the season as well. And some of that stuff, you couldn't really handle it. It was what it was. That's just how God intended that season to be for us. But obviously, I think we needed that season. I think it made us closer as a football team, because when we were able to get back together, all the time that we had missed, I think people really made an effort to try and catch back up. And I think that was the biggest thing with everybody, is just trying to get back together, become one, become a team again after literally seeing each other through a screen for so long.
Yeah, what were some of those big differences you saw from, you know, going from Matt Rule to Dave Aranda? And not really the beginning, because it's not really fair. Again, like you said, the Zoom calls, mm-hmm. like you're not going to get to know Dave Aranda that way. You're not going to get to know the coaches. Yeah. But once you got on campus and got to know kind of who he is and pick his brain a little bit and see what he's all about, what were some of the big differences between Rule and Aranda and kind of that transition?
Yeah, so I will say when we were able to get back to campus, we couldn't go home. So we were kind of stuck on campus. So I think that kind of helped a little bit because we were just stuck with everybody, kind of forced to, you know, make time for everybody and learn our new coaches and all the new staff. But just, you know, in that time period, I just learned he was a completely different person than Rule, which, granted, he should be. The biggest thing that I respected about, you know, Coach Aranda was he was going to be himself, and he knew who he was, and he was outright about that. Not a very outspoken guy, knows a lot, very, very philosophical, which I loved. I like to think of myself as pretty philosophical, too. Able to turn a quote about war and relate it to football, which was crazy. I think he always brought in a very interesting quote that I liked and was able to turn into football, and I really appreciate that about him. But, you know, he was a man about winning. He had came from winning, so he was going to make sure that we were going to do what we had to do to be a program of winning. And I think for me, the biggest thing, I didn't really get as much development as I would have liked to have gotten. But, you know, some of that is, it was his first year being a head coach. He had to learn a lot of that stuff, and I know it's not an easy job, probably one of the hardest jobs. So I was very open to hearing everything that he had, and I wasn't going to be too hard on him, too harsh on him. Obviously, you can't compare anybody. I don't like comparing people. So I was going to be the last person to try and compare him to Matt Rule because that's not who he was. That's not the type of coach that he was.
Yeah, but one thing that did stay consistent for you throughout the change was, you know, you went from Phil Snow, a defense coordinator that you really got to know really well and respect and learn a lot from, to having Ron Roberts come in. And I know you've talked, just you've had so much praise for what Ron Roberts brought to the program as well. What was he like as far as just teaching you and kind of allowing you to grow in his scheme? And I know, again, 2020 was probably not the best kind of year to look at for how much growth you had, mm-hmm. but I do know that Ron had a big, big part in your development, right?
Yes, sir. Huge. You know, I went from learning like fundamentals to learning X's and O's to like learning schemes. You know, Coach Roberts' defensive mind is out of this world when it comes to the schemes that he draws up and the, you know, how he can get different players to get different things done. It's just amazing. And so I really learned that football is it, especially defensive football, it takes 11 guys to be doing what they're going to do, especially when you open up a playbook and have a playbook like Ron Roberts. Just he really taught me that defense can be, it can be complicated if you want it to be, but it can be a lot of fun. I had so much fun playing in his defense. The way he was able to put guys in positions to make plays was just amazing. I know in that 2020 season, it probably wasn't seeing a lot, but I could see it. I knew we were going to be a good team going into that next year. We just had to get over the hump, you know, and just battling with COVID that entire year. It was just hard. But the greatest thing that I can think of is there was like, I want to say 3 or 4 of us that had gotten COVID going into that UT week that we played UT, and we had all got cleared, I want to say like that Wednesday to play. And that Wednesday, he had literally put in like 2 new plays and for us to learn. And so like it was kind of a challenge for me and Terrell and Dylan to, you know, learn those plays. Unfortunately, Christian wasn't able to play that game because he had gotten COVID a little later than us. So he was still out from COVID during that week. But just him putting in that play and then us having the challenge to learn it, I loved it. I love having a challenge. I love somebody that's going to challenge me as a coach. And so he really did that. He took that bar none.
Yeah. And I think people forget 2019, you had 3 fumble recoveries. I think 1 or 2 of them were on special teams, if I'm correct, or I think one of them was, and then the others were just in the flow of the game. But you kind of saw the flash, right, of creating turnovers or at least jumping on a fumble, making a play like that. But 2020 is the year where you took a big step forward as far as, okay, now we're seeing everything that we've heard in practice. And I'm sure for you is kind of validation of what you had been doing throughout practice. You had 3 interceptions, but what people forget is you had 3 interceptions, 46 tackles, but you only played in 9 games. I mean, if mm-hmm. it would have been a 12, 13-game season, I mean, there's a chance you might have had more interceptions than you had this year. You were a ball hawk, and honestly, the defense was actually pretty good. Like you mentioned, y'all had some really good performances in there. Just kind of talk about your season and finally seeing those interceptions come and finally seeing your impact even being more relevant on the field.
Yeah, I think going into that 2020, at least I knew, and a lot of us knew, we were going to be a pretty good defense. We were learning the defense fairly well. We had a lot of great schemes. And like I said, you know, Coach Roberts was putting in plays for people to make, for his players to make plays. And so that was reciprocating. Just going into that season, though, I kind of learned that if you're not playing and you're not playing loose, kind of what I said, I got a glimpse of that Kansas game my freshman year. You got to play to be having fun. And when you're having fun, everything is kind of going to go where it needs to go. The players are going to be made. The ball is going to find you when you're running to the ball. So I was just that season. The season didn't really matter. It was a COVID year. There was going to be an asterisk season anyways. And so we knew we were getting that year back. So I kind of had to talk with my parents. And, you know, going into that season, they were just saying, like, just be you. Just be free. Do whatever you want to do. Have fun. That's the most important thing. And I really took that to heart. I really, you know, did my best trying to do that, just trying to make sure every single game that I was going to have fun, I was going to have laughs, no matter what the outcome of the game was. There wasn't a game where we weren't on the sideline, you know, making jokes with each other, having fun. Even if we were losing the game, we were going to have fun regardless. And I think that had a lot to do with the success that we had on defense, even though it wasn't, you know, success was showing with, you know, wins and losses, but we were having some success as a defense.
Yeah, so then you threw that season away, like you said. You had some moments, and I think it probably taught you a lot of lessons going into 2021, mm-hmm. and probably made you feel like even more of a leader, right, on this team going into your what would be your final season. You finally had an off season. What was kind of that off season, that transition period where you, I know you were a leader in 2020, but I think 2021 getting ready for that season is probably where you took the biggest leap of, okay, this is a defense that I really need to be a leader on, and kind of that mm-hmm. transition between the seasons. What was that like for you?
Yes. Yeah, so just going into that off season, kind of had for the first time in a while, time to just rest my body. And the biggest thing, rest my mind, and kind of sit down with my parents and just, you know, talk about the things that the season brought to me, the things that I could learn from, the things that I can improve on. And I knew that going into this 2021 season that my number one goal is going to be to make sure that everybody has fun. That was something that was very important to me. I was going to make sure that no matter what the outcome on the game was, I was going to bring smiles to people's faces. I was going to boost morale for the team. And I think I really did that. And that was kind of starting from the young guys, you know, from the older guys, we had already kind of had that mentality. We knew that, but the young guys, they didn't really know that. So I really took it apart on myself to, you know, take those young guys under my wing, just make sure that they always knew that it's okay to be loose. You don't have to be so tight and, you know, angry. And for football, you can be a little loose and you can still have fun to play at a high level. So that was the biggest thing. And I wanted to show those guys that. I'm sure you can ask a lot of them, like, I was loose, but I was definitely, obviously, you can see I was making plays, too. I was a good football player. And it's funny, so many freshmen would be like, if I were to see you outside of football, I would not think you're a good football player. And it would just make me laugh because I was kind of pretty much doing, you know, what I had planned on doing. Like, I was trying to break the mold of what a prototypical football player is, like somebody that's mean mugging all the time and somebody that's angry. Like, that's not what it has to be. You can be a fun guy, you can have fun, you can make jokes and still be a good football player. So that was my whole goal going into the season, especially as a leader.
Well, JT, you didn't take very long to have some fun. It took about it took about 3 minutes for you to start having some fun in the 2021 season, as you had a pick six, and it was honestly very reminiscent of that Kansas play, and it kind of all came full mm-hmm. circle because you had the interception against Texas State and basically got to walk into the end zone. Yeah, like I said, first 3 minutes of the season, you were already having a smile on your face and having a good time.
Yeah, that was definitely the first sign that this was going to be a good season to me. You know, just that entire game. It wasn't even just me. You know, Petrie had a pick, McVay had him a pick, which I love seeing. you know, PJ had a sack. You know, everybody was just playing at a high level. Everybody was having fun, sitting on the sideline, just making jokes as the game was going on. And that literally translated and, you know, kept going throughout the entire season up until the Sugar Bowl. We were literally doing it at the Sugar Bowl. And that was just the whole point of football. I think that's why this was one of the best seasons that I've ever had, because this is the most fun that I've ever had playing football. And, you know, and a lot of it's credited to the dude that I was playing with. You know, I love those guys. Those are my brothers, and they just made it a point that we were going to have fun no matter what the outcome of the game was. Luckily, this season we had a whole bunch of wins. There weren't a lot of losses, but yeah, the main thing was just to have fun and play good football, and that's what we did.
Yeah, and I mean, JT, I think you got a little greedy because you scored your first career touchdown, and then you showed up in the second game, and I believe y'all were up like 52-0. And I think Texas Southern was driving. They were about to score, and that fumble happens. And JT, you know, a lot of times football players they'll reach down to pick up the fumble, and it's kind of hard. You know, you got to bend down to try to pick it up. Sometimes guys kick it, bobble it. Yeah, there was no bobbling there. You picked that thing up, and I mean, it was a straight line. And I know you told me early last week that this was your most memorable play at Baylor. Take me through that play and just kind of how you continued to have fun early on.
Yeah, so just kind of going into that play, I had, like, my tight end man, he was just blocking on the backside of the play. And so I was just, you know, doing my job. Even though I knew he was blocking, I went to go, you know, just hover over top of him, and then I followed the ball over the top. And then it just happened to be on the ground, and I just, you know, as you said, fluidly just picked it up and started running. But what makes that my most memorable play at Baylor is because as I'm looking in the Jumbotron to make sure nobody's behind me, I just see a sea of green. And it's just everybody in green trying to run full speed. And it's just so funny. And it's just a testament to what I've been saying, because we get to the sideline and everybody's like, man, I was just trying to run 23 on the GPS. Like, everybody was just trying to get fast times to say that they ran fast. So it was just everybody just running really, really fast, trying to boost their GPA stats. Terrell, I'm going to just say it, Terrell is slow as molasses. Terrell was trying to run as fast as he could, trying to catch me just so he could get his GPS stats up there. Christian running fast, Zeke running fast. It was just a very fun moment. And then me and Christian, you know, high-fiving in the end zone, was just all fun and games. Everybody was, you know, celebrating, having fun on the sideline. But that was just a very, very fun moment, just to see everybody running really fast. And in my mind, I was doing the same thing too. I was running as fast as I can, full speed, just so I could see how fast I could clock on the GPS. But it's just funny to look back and see those guys doing the same exact thing.
Was that your fastest ever, and what would you clock at, if you remember?
I ran 23, I think it was like 23.2 or 23.6 miles per hour. I don't think that was my fastest GPS time. I think the fastest GPS time I clocked was in 2019 when we played West Virginia.
Okay, on the interception.
But if that wasn't the fastest, no, sir. It was West Virginia 2019. They had scored, and I was trying to go chase the dude to try and keep him from scoring. But it was definitely up there if it wasn't the fastest.
Okay.
I was a little upset because I think Tyquan had ran faster than me that game, and I thought I had it for sure. So I was trying to get him throughout the rest of the week.
Oh, man.
I was getting my GPS times up there, trying to get my average up.
That's awesome. So, I mean, y'all win the Texas Southern game pretty easily. Y'all beat Kansas, and then it sets up the showdown. And I don't know about y'all. I think the media kind of all circled that Iowa State game as, you know, this is a game that if Baylor's able to win this game, they have a real shot at contending in the Big 12. I'm not sure if y'all felt like that. You might have. That might have been something you talked about. But I know that was a really close game, and a game that against Iowa State, I felt like there had been a lot of close games, maybe a little bit of bad blood between the two teams. But what was kind of y'all's mindset going into that one?
Yeah, I mean, our mindset was this is the next game, so it's the most important game. It wasn't a very big game just because they're a ranked opponent, but just based off of the premise that they were the next team that we had on our schedule. I don't think there was a lot of hype from us going into that game. I think we knew we were a good football team. We knew they were a good football team, and this was going to be a close football game. But the mindset was never trying to overhype the game or make it anything bigger than what it was. It was just another football game on our schedule. And so I think that kind of helped us play as well as we did in that game too.
Yeah, and I mean, I know this is a controversial topic, but should interceptions on 2-point conversions count to your interception total?
It's nice to say, but on paper, I guess it does make sense that it's not a turnover because you can't turn over on 2 points. They're going to kick the ball anyway. So I get it. It's a nice highlight to have, though, just me going to high point the ball. Definitely a moment I won't forget. Whether it's on the statute or not, in my mind, it's the interception.
Okay. I thought so, too. So that would make it 6 for the season. So then you went to Stillwater, and y'all had a lot of momentum, started the season strong, 4-0. And this Oklahoma State game was just kind of one of those weird games. Terrell Bernard didn't play in it. I know Matt played his tail off, had an impactful game. But kind of your general thoughts, you go into that one, it's a tough, close game. How much did that hurt y'all's psyche, or was it more so like, we were right in this game, we should have won this game, like, let's make sure that if we get to play them again, we're more prepared the next time?
Yeah, I think definitely going, you know, leaving that game, it was never like, man, we should have won that game, but it was never, you know, any animosity or bad blood towards it, because we knew that when we played them again later on in the season, we were going to win them. I think we kind of had an idea in our mind that we were going to play those guys in the Big 12 championship. Very, very good team. And so we kind of knew that that was probably the team that we were going to play in the Big 12. Never a shadow in a doubt in our mind that we weren't going to play them again. And so I think it was helpful that we kind of saw them, and, you know, that game didn't end the way that we wanted it to. But as you said, Terrell was out. We know a key player on our defense, a key leader on our team in general. But Matt Jones filled in very, very well. A young guy that has a very, very high ceiling. I can't wait to see what he does. Very bright future. But yeah, just, you know, some things in the game don't go your way. You know, we had all those turnovers, but couldn't really convert on them. Just defensively couldn't, you know, stop a few runs that we should have stopped. You know, runs popping in the A and B gaps that definitely shouldn't be popping. So it was definitely not even close to the best football that we could have played. You know, we were in our base defense and still getting gassed on certain things. So I think that was a very pivotal moment in our season, because it helped us kind of come back to earth. It brought us back down from the high that we were on from winning all those games, and made us realize that we are a good football team, but we're human. We're going to make mistakes. And if we don't clean up those mistakes early on in the game, they'll hurt us.
Yeah, and I mean, y'all had 3 interceptions in that game, and like you said, I think you converted those for 0 points on those 3 interceptions, which I'm sure was kind of disappointing. But on the flip side, I do think those 3 interceptions against Spencer Sanders were probably a little bit of a sign of things to come, but we'll get to that at the end of this season. You win 3 in a row. You beat West Virginia. You win the homecoming game against BYU really handedly. I felt like those 2 games in a row were honestly probably 2 of your best performances of the midway point of your season. Y'all played really, really well in both of those games. And then, of course, had the rivalry game, beat Texas. And that set up a matchup on the road in Fort Worth against TCU. What was y'all's mental state going into that game? And how did you feel y'all prepared for that game against the Horned Frogs?
I think, at least in my mind a little bit, some of us, for me specifically, we're a little distracted on the whole, you know, if we win this game, we get college game day. And so we had 1 foot in this week and another foot in next week. And I think that kind of played a part in it. Also, the biggest thing was, you know, Max wasn't playing. So we didn't know what game plan they were going to have with the quarterback. And so the not knowing also played a part of, you know, their success that they had offensively against us. Just a lot of things went into that game. We couldn't really convert. We couldn't get off the field on 3rd down. There was just so many things that I could go on and on, the long list of the bad things that could have happened that did happen. Kind of Murphy's Law. That game is just the perfect example of Murphy's Law. Anything that could happen is going to happen. So I think that was, you know, another good game for us too, because we, again, we needed to come, you know, back down to earth. We needed to be humbled, and that was a very, very, very humbling experience for us. And I'm glad it happened, because I don't think we would have had the season that we had, you know, finishing out without losing that game.
So if I would have told you going into this game that a quarterback in his first career start would have 530 yards of total offense and three touchdowns and complete 71% of his passes, what would you have told me?
I would have thought you were crazy. there's just no way that, you know, somebody has video game stats like that in their first start, especially against, you know, of the defense that we had this season. But, you know, things happen. Obviously, those kids are on scholarship too for a reason. You know, they're ball players. They're gonna make plays. So I think going into that game, that was never the mindset. But we quickly learned that this was going to be a fight, and if we don't turn things around, then, you know, it's inevitably we're going to end up losing. I think the biggest thing that game was our defense always makes plays. It's just that game we just didn't make enough plays.
Yeah, and I know that obviously game is not made on one play. Like, this was a total team effort of just a tough loss on the road. But I felt like it was kind of big for y'all. Gary drives them down the field. All you need is a field goal to win. He throws the interception. I'm sure that was a very deflating feeling for everyone. But y'all turned it around immediately and we're able to get a huge win the very next week against Oklahoma in a game that, yeah, like you said, could have been a college game day environment had y'all won the TCU game. But how big of it kind of was it for, you know, Gary to have that moment and then turn around in the Oklahoma game, and for your defense, honestly, to turn around into the Oklahoma game and both Gary and your defense play just so well against Oklahoma, against a top five team?
Yeah, it was huge, especially Oklahoma, who we haven't. That was the one team that I hadn't been able to beat in my college career. So that was a huge win for us, beating them at home, just especially off of the TCU week that we had. I think that TCU game taught us a lot as a football team. Like you said, Gary throwing that interception at the very end, you know, that definitely calloused him because he was a much better player after that going on the rest of the season. I just think that was the first game where we were like, okay, look, wins and losses doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what our ranking is in the country. It doesn't matter what we've done in the past. Like, we need to have each and every game set up like this is our first game of the season, and we need to go and dominate and show people why we're the best team in the Big 12.
Yeah, and y'all went on the road, beat Kansas State in what was kind of a trap game, especially once Gary got hurt. Y'all were kind of rolling. He gets injured, but y'all survived. Y'all played great defense, were able to win that one. The Tech game, y'all were able to win, and kind of a much closer than expected game. Blake Shapen's first start. Again, the defense playing pretty well in both games. The Tech game, I'm sure there was a play or two that you wish you had back, especially that tight end screen. But overall, you know, winning those two games, and that set up the matchup against Oklahoma State, the rematch in the Big 12 championship. You know, the kind of leading up to that, you know, y'all played them in the past. You were getting ready to play them again. You most likely knew it was going to be Shapen as the quarterback probably early on in that week. How did, as a defense, what was y'all's focus going into that game to try to get better than the first time you played them?
I think we kind of went back to the drawing board. We watched the game and we saw that the game was really determined just because of a lot of mistakes that we had defensively. So it wasn't like we had to, you know, come up with some new magic defense, to fix what had happened previously. It was very simple things. I think we knew that. So going to the game, and we obviously, when you play a team twice, the second time, you feel like you know them a lot more than you did the first time. And it helped to have even more preparation for that team, because we knew we were going to be playing them, you know, right after that OU game. So it was like people literally went straight after the OU game. They played OU. They ended up winning. People were straight on Thundercloud, like, you know, looking at old games, cutting up film. Like, everybody was on it. It was just a whole different demeanor from everybody going into that week than it was the first week we played them. And I think a lot of that is because we had been humbled by them before, so we weren't going to do anything extra. We weren't going to do anything, you know, too crazy. We were just going to play the football that we had been playing all year.
So you start the game and the first half is going really well. I mean, the defense is playing great. Blake Shapen is probably, he was having kind of one of those similar to what Chandler Morris did versus y'all, just having an amazing start in this game. I mean, he was just terrific. I think he completed his first like 17 or 18 passes. It was really remarkable what he did. And the score at half was 21-6. You go into half. Where did you feel like your team was? I mean, you guys had to have been feeling really confident about your game plan. You'd picked off Spencer Sanders a couple times already. Just kind of take me into that locker room conversation and how y'all probably talked about, like, we need to stay focused and make sure we close this game out strong.
Mm-hmm. It was definitely, everything was, this is a four quarter game. This is a four quarter game. This is a four quarter game. We knew the team that, OU was. And they tend to turn it on in the second half a lot, as you can see they did versus Notre Dame. And so we knew that they could be very volatile in the second half. We knew we were going to have to be on our P's and Q's. And then a lot of it, I think a majority of us knew that Blake was injured, and, you know, offensively we couldn't do the things that we wanted to do. We saw that in the second, towards the end of the second quarter, and we knew that's kind of how the second half was going to be. So I think defensively we knew, like, the rest of the game was on us. It's always a mindset when you're winning the game that if the other team doesn't score again, you win this game. And so I think that's the mindset that every single person had. We're going to keep them out of the end zone as best as we could, keep us on top, and that was just going to be the end of the game. So I think kind of going into that second half, that was the main goal, is just to keep them from putting points on the board.
So two questions about this young quarterback, Blake Shapen. If he doesn't get hurt, how much do you win by? And did you see this coming with your Big 12 championship prep, just kind of the player that he might end up being in this game?
There was no doubt in my mind that if Shape was going to be the quarterback, we were going to be fine. Great athlete, great player, great kid, very good with everybody, in tune with the offense, in tune with his playbook. There was no doubt in my mind that if he was going to play, we were going to be perfectly fine. And as you can see, we were. If he doesn't get hurt, who knows? I'm not one to speculate and do all that stuff. The game could have been the same outcome, or we could have put up 50 points on the board. So, but you never know. Their defense played lights out going into that second half too. So that plays a part in it as well.
Yeah, you had an interception in this game. You had seven tackles, and I'm sure all of those were big moments for you. But I think kind of the overall thing that I think probably is going to stand out to most people, and I don't think people talk about this enough, because obviously they look at the last play, Jaron McVay, just such an incredible play, the Mick play, as it's been called now, that goal line stand. But I think people forget, y'all forced, I think, three field goals that were under 23 yards. I mean, y'all got a bunch of stops really close to the goal line. What were those moments like? Because I'm sure for any defense player, those are the moments you live for.
Yeah, I mean, shout out to the D-line. Those guys, you talk about a bend, don't break mentality, and they played that to a T. Just a great wall out there, just setting edges, being a force, and just not giving any ground. That was the biggest thing. Staying in their gaps. Very easy when your D-line stays in their gaps for your linebackers to see what gaps they have, and then for your safeties to fill the gaps that they have off of that. And so, you know, our D-line plays lights out going to that second half, especially in the red zone. That's just unheard of for you to have multiple red zone stops within the 10-yard line and they don't get a touchdown.
Yeah, and I mean, I can't kind of go away from this conversation without asking you. You're standing there on that play, the Mick play. What's your thought process? What was your reaction? I mean, just everything about that play, and just also the guy who made the play, you know, being a former walk-on and a guy who everything I've heard about him is such a great teammate. Just take me through kind of your emotions and what you saw in that play.
Yeah, so when I couldn't believe that they had ran the same play twice going in on that drive. So then obviously, you know, the third play is probably going to be a power pass off of it. So then, you know, going to that fourth play, when I see him try and break for the pylon, like, my mind just completely goes blank. Like, I know I'm so far away from the play that there's nothing I can do. And when I'm looking out there, it looks like it's nothing but green. And then out of nowhere, I see 42 and that white and green just burst out there. And I would have bet my entire life savings that McVay would have made that play. Once I saw that with him, because who else could make that play but McVay? Talk about a guy that he doesn't get talked about for his speed a lot, but McVay is very, very explosive, especially from 10 to 15 yards. McVay is very, very fast, very explosive, and not a lot of people see that. But once he broke and he had a proper angle, I knew we were going to be okay. It's just crazy. You know, football is a game of inches. Just a inch more forward and that game could have had a very, very different outcome. But just for McVay to make that play was just huge. And I think it was just the cherry on top for his career. You know, you just said it, a former walk-on and a guy who, in my opinion, should have had a scholarship way before he ended up having one because McVay was a great player. I couldn't even believe McVay wasn't on scholarship when I first got to Baylor. He'd even started a game or two. So just a guy that worked tremendously hard, a great athlete, and I just love that for him.
Yeah, and that was kind of the cherry on top to the redemption story, right, from 2019. Yeah. Y'all weren't able to win that game, but McVay was on that team. You were on that team. A lot of guys were on that team. Winning a Big 12 championship, what did that mean to you? And also, I mean, winning it the way that y'all did.
I mean, it just meant everything to me. For me to be a part of that, in my mind, probably one of the greatest defensive spans in Big 12 history, let alone Baylor history. Just to be a part of a team that went and put that, you know, that 2021 Big 12 champ on our stadium, our indoor, is huge. And then to think that this was the first, like, game that we had won in the actual championship game. The other Big 12 championships were, like, outright. I think we tied with TCU one year. The other one, we just had the best record in the Big 12. That's how it was. So even just the additive of this is the actual first Big 12 championship game that Baylor has won, was just amazing. Just for us to be able to go down in the record books, and that the team that we had this year is definitely deserving of that. We just had an amazing team, and I'm so glad that me and those guys get to go down in history forever.
Yeah, and what did you have conversations with the older guys, the guys who are on the 2019 team, and just kind of just them calling you or you calling them and talking about, you know, how cool it is and how it was kind of one of those things? You mentioned Lockhart talking to you about, and you mentioned in 2019 mm-hmm. when we were talking earlier how, you know, you wanted to go win one for those guys. What were those conversations like?
Yeah, you know, as I mentioned earlier, Lockhart came up to me just talking about how you don't know how much this has done for me. And, you know, Christian was right there with me too, because me and Christian were there. Henry Black, Sam Tecklenburg, all those guys were actually on the sideline at the game. So seeing them at the game was amazing. The looks on their face and the celebration they had was as if they had won it themselves. Like they were suiting up, had a helmet and shoulder pads on too. So I loved that. And of course I got a lot of texts from, you know, old coaches, old players just congratulating me. And it was just good to really get that for the program. And like I said earlier, I wish I could have did more to get one for all those guys too, but they played a huge part in this win. So they get much of a Big 12 ring than I do.
Yeah, and then you'll had to sit back and wait a minute to figure out what bowl you were going to be in and, you know, maybe sit there. Maybe some of y'all thought, oh, maybe college football playoff, you know, hopes like that. I know it was kind of going to be tough with two losses, but y'all got the Sugar Bowl. Y'all were going to play Ole Miss. You had a month to prepare for that. How different was the prep for this game compared to the game in 2019?
So the biggest thing was the whole COVID issue, you know, with the Omicron variant kind of being more prevalent now. We had to be a little bit more safe when it came to usually what bowl games are, which is you get there early, you have no curfew, you get to party, especially in New Orleans. But with this, you know, with the Omicron variant being out there and COVID being such an issue in the bowl season, we weren't really able to do a lot of that. So they delayed our departure for a couple of days. So we stayed in Waco. We were able to have, I think in my mind, better practices because we were in Waco, because we hadn't traveled yet. So I think that played a part in it. And then also, you know, it's unfortunate, but we were on lockdown. We weren't able to really leave the hotel for anything. And so I think that played a big part in it too. I mentioned earlier that, you know, when we had went in 2019, excuse me, it wasn't as much of a business trip as I would have liked to thought it was, but this year it was all business. And part of that is because we couldn't do anything even if we wanted to. So I think that played a lot into the game as well. It was just pretty much like any other week, which it's unfortunate because you don't get the full bowl experience. But we ended up coming with a win, I think because of it.
Yeah, and I mean, the game kicks off. It's going kind of back and forth a little bit. You have an interception really early on mm-hmm. Matt Corral, a future first-round pick, making a big play on the Sugar Bowl stage. How cool was that, and how much did that kind of shake the jitters off for you going into the Sugar Bowl game that I know you probably put a lot of pressure on yourself, but you went out there, made a play early, and I'm sure that kind of woke you up a little bit and made things a lot easier for you, huh?
Oh, well, I mean, when they won the toss and didn't defer, I was awake from that moment. From that moment going on, I was just ready to play from that moment. So I think that kind of played a part in the play that I made early on, because I kind of felt some type of way about that. I'm sure a lot of people feel some type of way about that on our defense. But, yeah, just going to set the tone early, that was my whole goal when they did that. And so I just tried my best to go on and do that, and I ended up coming with an interception. So.
Yeah, that was a big play, and obviously the first quarter goes on. Y'all have 3 sacks on Matt Corral. He was 2 of 6 throwing the ball. They were running him a ton. He had like 7 mm-hmm. carries. I know he was sacked 3 times, so it was really 4 carries, but I think 2 or 3 of them were design keepers. So first of all, were you surprised by that they were running him so much? And secondly, obviously he gets injured. I know it dampen some things from a media's perspective. They kind of downplay certain things that happened in this game. But for y'all, I mean, did that change your focus at all?
You know, first and foremost, when he went down, I felt it, because that's a dude. He's the heart and the soul of that team. And for him to be playing in a bowl game is just huge. It's just a huge risk. There's not a lot of benefit towards it, but he did that for his team. And so for him to go down, I really fell for him, and I was really sad. But I wasn't surprised that they were running him so much. Like I said, that dude, he's a great leader, would have gave an arm and his leg for his team. So he was going to do anything that he could do for them to win. And if that meant him running, he was going to run the ball.
Yeah, I mean, so he leaves the game. The quarter, I mean, again, it was kind of just a back-and-forth defensive affair early. Al Walcott makes the big play, gets the pick 6 as Ole Miss is driving, sprints down the sidelines, 96 yards, interception return for a touchdown. The defense for Baylor strikes first. How important was that going into halftime that y'all had the 7-point cushion? And, I mean, y'all saw another big defensive play early.
I think it was huge just for us to get points on the board early on, when offense just kind of couldn't get the ball rolling. This kind of goes what Coach Aran harped on all season, which was that, you know, complimentary football. We were just going to try and do what we could to get it done for the offense, and we did what we could. And so I think that kind of put points on the board early on for everybody, and that kind of got everybody kind of settled into the game, let everybody know that we're perfectly fine. We just got to go out and play our best football.
Yeah, and in the second half, y'all gave up a touchdown. It got the score back to 7-7. And I think a lot of people felt like, okay, now this game is, you know, kind of up for grabs for anyone. But of course, they come down, miss a field goal, and y'all are able to kind of weather the storm of the third quarter, and then it leads into the fourth quarter where y'all just had a great fourth quarter, which honestly I felt like had been a trend for this team throughout the year. Did you feel like y'all played a lot better in fourth quarters this season, maybe than kind of earlier in the games?
Definitely. I think there was more emphasis on, you know, putting the game away in the fourth quarter as we got later into the season, and we started, you know, actually playing by that.
Yeah, and y'all scored the touchdown, made it 14-7. Then you had another big play, another interception, and really your interception capped off with the touchdown on that drive by Tyquan Thornton was pretty much the dagger. But you to get another fourth quarter interception, your 5th interception if you count the 2-point conversion, 1-6th interception on the year. I mean, just spectacular stuff, man. The heartbreak kid just making plays. How cool was that in the fourth quarter to kind of make that play, then score the touchdown, realize, hey, you know, we're probably going to be Sugar Bowl champs.
Yeah, I mean, it was just awesome kind of being able to have the game that I had to kind of seal the deal, you know, with that last play. I really wanted Terrell to get it, but Terrell didn't even get it, so I just had to capitalize myself. And I said, okay, I got this, or I'll do it since you didn't want to do it. So I just went and got the play. So it was good to just, you know, kind of put all that stuff at ease. And I think a lot of people on our team really deserve that. And I harped on this a lot in a couple interviews that I had, but the dynasty of Baylor is one I set that tone this season as a football standpoint. Those young guys, they're going to remember those games for, you know, for the rest of their lives. But most importantly, they're going to remember they're a part of a winning team, and that's the goal, is to always be a winning team at Baylor University.
Yeah, so y'all capped off a great year. You had a terrific finish to your career at Baylor. And just kind of after the Sugar Bowl, when you sat back and reflected just on how special your time was at Baylor and how many ups and downs you had during your career just as a team, just how special was your time being a Baylor Bear?
It's just so special. I couldn't even put into words and describe to you how much, you know, the people that I met mean to me. The situations that I went through with those people mean to me, and just how much I've grown as a football player, as a man, as a son, as a brother, just as a grandson, anything. The time I spent at Baylor was, 4 years doesn't really seem like a lot of time in the grand scheme of things, but those 4 years are just so pivotal in my life, and I wouldn't trade them for anything in the world. Every single person that I met, every situation that I went through, I wouldn't trade that 2-7 season in for anything in the world, because in my mind that 2-7 season was more important than this season, because just the development that I had with my teammates that season, like, we went through one of the lowest points that we could have went through, and we came out the very next year and turned it all around. And I give a lot of credit to Coach Aranda and the coaching staff for doing that, because a lot of that was, you know, based off of them and Coach Roberts opening up the playbook and just having so much more trust in us. Coach Aranda having so much more trust in us, and just players having more trust in each other, which is amazing.
Yeah, and I know you made the decision to go to the NFL draft, and I know it was kind of a tough one for you, but I think you pretty much knew it was time for you to move on. But was that hard for you to make that decision to just say, all right, you know, my college career is over, I'm going to go to the NFL, I'm going to test the waters, try to, you know, become a pro at the sport? Was that a tough decision for you?
It was a little early on. I think as the season kind of tailored off towards the end, you know, I had wrapped everything up with school. I had got my degree. I graduated. And then I was having a good season. So I think it was a little easier for me to let go of college football and, you know, the college lifestyle, because I wasn't a big partier. I wasn't really doing all the stuff that the typical college kid does because of my sport. But the biggest thing was leaving behind, you know, some of my teammates. And I say leaving behind just because they're still in Texas and I'm away training right now. But I still talk to all those dudes daily. We're in group chats. Like, those are my brothers. Those are my family. And so I'm always going to keep in contact with them, always calling them, always. I'm right now, but I definitely still in connection to all those guys. So I'm just excited to see what they have going forward.
Yeah, and I know you're training in Phoenix, so, I mean, how excited are you for this next chapter in your life and your football career, trying to be an NFL draft pick? And I know you're in Phoenix, mm-hmm. right, training, but,
yes, sir.
Yeah, so what's kind of this next step in your football journey going to be like, and how do you want it to be written, kind of your future in football?
Mm-hmm. Just kind of the same way that I kind of was in college. I just want to be the guy that's always had fun playing football. The dude that makes sure that him and his teammates are always smiling, no matter what level I'm on, I'm always going to be me. I'm never going to change. So just hopefully, you know, I've been training, as you said, out here in Phoenix. I got my combine invite, thankfully, by the grace of God. So I'll be going to Indy, showcasing my talent at Indy. And then hopefully in April, my name will be called.
Awesome, JT. Well, you're a Big 12 champ, Sugar Bowl champ, the heartbreak kid. Thank you so much for coming on and talking to me and sharing your story and your kind of career at Baylor. I know a lot of people really appreciate everything you did for the program, and I know everyone's going to be cheering for you. A lot of Baylor fans have your back.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me and allowing me to just tell my journey to everybody.